702. News and current affairs.
Advocate Mudidi Mamanya is my guest, legal expert, joining us to help us understand the legalese, the legalities, and the legals of this particular case. Advocate, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time and Happy New Year to you.
Yes, Happy New Year, Aubrey, and I agree with him, Tartin, that if you continue to call me advocate, you owe me a New Year present. I have converted from being an advocate to being an attorney.
Oh, my apologies. My apologies, attorney Mudidi Mamanya. My absolute apologies. I didn't realize that we are at that place. In fact, I will take your challenge for your present and then I'll just transfer it to Osin Tate because she is the one that has been given the information that it is Advocate Mudidi Mamanya. But thank you very much, sir. I really, really appreciate it. For those of us who are not au fait with legalese and the processes that must be followed, particularly when one goes into a private prosecution, would want to perhaps start with the understanding of just before the ANC's elective conference. In fact, I interviewed Ntate Mzwane Lemanyi here as they announced the fact that they would be launching a private prosecution against the president. What does that mean, Mr. Manya, that somebody is launching a private prosecution and what needs to happen for that to happen?
Yes, thanks, Aubrey, and your listeners, and Happy New Year to everybody and best wishes. Aubrey, you know, every country has a state, and the state has certain legal and constitutional responsibilities. You would have the police, in our case, for instance, and you still have private security. You could have the National Prosecuting Authority, which is the authority in terms of the Constitution, charged with the prosecution of crime. But as you know, citizens will always let me have my own private security. It does not make the private security the South African Police Service.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the prosecution, there is an exception to the rule that the authority which is charged with prosecuting crime is the National Prosecuting Authority. And the law makes provision for a person who is unhappy and has got good reason, of course, with a decision not to prosecute, because it doesn't mean every time a crime is reported, it will lead into a prosecution. It may as well be that there's no evidence. Now, that person can institute what we call a private prosecution. But obviously, to safeguard the abuse of that, there are requirements for that. One of those is that the National Prosecuting Authority must have taken a decision not to prosecute the person against whom a complaint has been made. And that is evidenced by a certificate which says we will not prosecute Aubrey. And that also is a certificate that you call nolle prosequi. Nolle prosequi is the Latin phrase for that type of document.
So if I understand you correctly, Mr. Manya, the state or the National Prosecuting Authority had made a decision not to prosecute certain individuals, and I'm imagining, or I'm understanding here, sorry, that we're talking about Mr. Billy Downer, Ms. Karen Morn, and we'll talk about the president and how he fits into this matter. But we're talking about a matter relating to the issue of the publicization of the former president's medical records. Talk to me about that story and whether or not there is merit in that particular issue.
Yes, Aubrey, if you remember, this issue of what you refer to as a medical record, which is actually not a medical record, featured before Judge Goon in the Pietermaritzburg High Court. Judge Goon described that document as but a medical certificate, not a medical record, which means it says Aubrey went to see Dr. Manya today. It does not necessarily say Aubrey suffers from this and this and to that extent. So that document that they're talking about is not a medical record. And I think there's if people are keep on referring to it that way, it's a bit of propaganda. Now, the complaint here is that Ms. Mon had access to these documents, and the allegation is that Advocate Bildauna is the one who provided that document. I don't think there's a dispute around the fact that the document featured in the public domain through the media. I think what is probably an issue is whether it was released prior or after it was filed in court by Mr. Zuma's lawyers. So that is the issue. And I think arising out of that, as I understand it, Mr. Zuma then wrote to the president to complain about the conduct of Mr. Downer and seemed to have wanted the president to take some specific action. The president then wrote to the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development and said, listen, and the NPA falls under you. There are these complaints, and please can you have them investigated? Get also the legal practice counsel, because Mr. Downer will be a legal practitioner in the jurisdiction of the legal practice counsel to investigate. Now, that seems to be what irritated Mr. Zuma, and it seems that is the basis on which he seems to suggest that the president sort of participated in what he regards as an offense committed by Mr. Downer. Now, obviously, the first question, if you talk into the merits now, is whether Mr. Downer has committed any offense. Because if he hasn't, then you can't have an accessory. If he has committed an offense, is the president, in any event, an accessory? Now, an accessory is a person who sort of participates after an offense has been committed.
Okay. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I also don't want to ignore this issue because, as you said, it could be misconstrued by some as an issue of propaganda. Please explain to me what the difference is between a medical record and a medical certificate as far as the law is concerned, because I suppose colloquially some may argue that whether it's a certificate or but it is a document and therefore forms part of the records of a particular issue. And I imagine that that is probably the nub of the Jacob Zuma legal team to say that you want to call it a certificate, you want to call it, it is a matter of record. And for that reason, we have some sort of case here because this was not supposed to be revealed to a journalist, I imagine. Help us understand that, Mr. Manya, because I think that that is the real thrust behind the accusation against Billy Downer and then Karen Mon and I suppose the president as an after effect of all of this. But explain to me that part. I'm missing it.
Yeah, let me put it in the most simple form that anybody can relate. You know, that document, when you have flu and you have not been able to go to work for 3 days.
Yes.
And that little standard, it's actually a standard form that almost all doctors use to say, I saw Aubrey Masango on such and such a day, he was unfit from such and such a day, and all blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
That is a certificate.
Yes.
You know? In the ordinary course, and that's what we're talking about here.
Yes.
A medical record would give a detailed diagnosis of your illness. It will give your treatment. It will say what are you being treated for, how are you being treated for. So that is a record. You know, it provides details.
Uh-huh.
Now, this other one is just confirmation that you've been to a doctor. You will know that in law, that document is not necessarily admissible unless the medical practitioner who issued it confirms under oath that, in fact, you are suffering from a particular condition, you are unable to actively participate at work or do something. That would constitute a record.
So if I am to understand you correctly, Mr. Manya, it's not necessarily that there is a piece of paper in contention here. It would only become a matter of a medical record if the contents of that piece of paper reveal certain confidential information about a particular patient.
Yes, and that is where the violation will occur because it would have violated the privacy of that person by disclosing the medical condition of that person.
And in this case, we have a document. So, and in this case, we have a document that simply says Aubrey Masango went to a doctor on such and such a date.
Yeah, and he's not well.
Okay. All right, all right. I want to move on from there. the second issue is whether or not this particular document had sort of passed its gestation period in the protective space of being made public to a journalist. That seems to be another issue of contention here. Help me through that, please, Mr. Manya.
As I said, look, court documents are public documents. If you file an affidavit and you were to attach your medical record, not even a certificate, and you don't want that to be made public or to be published, you would make an application to have that part declared confidential, so it will be limited. Otherwise, in ordinary circumstances, court documents, you can go into a court as we speak, Aubrey,
yes,
with a case number and say, I'm requesting for this file. They will give you the file. Nobody will say, you can't see, this is Manya's matter. If there is a confidential part of the file, they will not give you that confidential part. Now, I understand Mr. Downer and Karen Mon's case to be that, look, you filed an affidavit with this document. That's where we got it. Of course, Mr. Zuma and his team are saying, no. You got the document before we filed it at court. So I think that's really where the heart of the matter is.
So you're saying to me that the document and any other information relating to this case remains public documents that can be accessed by anybody, in terms of the laws of this country, once what has happened?
Once it has been filed at court, once it is part of the court record.
So
remember, let me simplify it, Aubrey.
Yep.
When we bring an application to court, we file an application, notice of motion, an affidavit, and it's annexed, okay?
Yes.
So I will serve the document on the opponent, and ultimately it will be taken to the court because there has to be a court file.
Yes.
Okay. That is the document which is a public document. So if Aubrey were to become aware that I've got this case and he gets the case number, he can go to court and say, I'm requesting this file, and they will give you the file. It's a public document. You don't have to follow any procedure except to complete that slip at court to ask for the file, and they give you the file. And you can even make a copy of the document, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So once it's a court document, it is no longer, if I understand you correctly, Mr. Manya, it is no longer a confidential document because it is now a property of the state for which any South African has access to if they make the right application.
Yes, except if it has already been declared to be a confidential part of the court file.
Right.
So the court file can have a confidential part if you don't want issues. Let me give you another simple example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, matters involving divorce and children, you'll always see the judgment is Miss X, Mr. R, you know. That is the confidentiality regime that is applied to those types. So you won't even know who this person is.
Right, right.
You find
right.
that the parties is Mr. X and Mr. R, but you know everybody has got a name, Mudilima Manya or Brima Sango.
Yes.
But it could be Mr. X or Miss R. That is the confidentiality system. Now, it doesn't mean you can't access the file, but you may not even know who the people are. And
yes.
Then additional is that you can have a part of the file, or the whole file for that matter, declared confidential.
So if this particular document, which is, I suppose, at the center of the controversy between former President Jacob Zuma, Billy Downer, and Karen Moon, had been declared confidential through an application process, then there would be some merit to the dissatisfaction of the former president?
Yes, partly yes, there would be. And I'm saying partly yes because you would still have to prove that Mr. Downer disclosed the documents. Now, if, for instance, I went to uplift the document from court, I would be in breach of an order of the court because the court would have said this document must not be made public. Now, that's a different crime.
How else would Ms. Morn have accessed the document if it wasn't made known to her by the prosecutor?
Well, as I said, my understanding is that she says I got it from the court file after Mr. Zuma filed the document. So I think I accept that as the way she found, unless the evidence proves otherwise.
All right. So that clarifies that. President Jacob Zuma then writes a letter to his comrade and former deputy president Cyril Ramaphosa, and says that there's been a breach, at least as far as he's concerned, in the way that this information is to be made available. And what relief was he looking for from President Cyril Ramaphosa? And I ask this question, Mr. Manya, because President Cyril Ramaphosa, understood to be an accessory after the fact, and I'm looking for an explanation of what that means. But what sort of relief was former President Jacob Zuma looking from the current president?
Well, let me answer it in two ways. What I think I understand Mr. Zuma to have wanted is that Mr. Downer's action should be taken against him, but you must also bear in mind that in his own corruption trial, part of what he sought to achieve was to have Mr. Downer removed from the prosecution for what he called misconduct and conflict of interest, something. And you'll recall that this matter dates back a few years back because Mr. Downer is the lead prosecutor in this matter.
Yeah.
Now, but the other side of it is, in our constitutional framework, the president cannot dictate to the prosecutors who prosecute, who doesn't prosecute. He doesn't have such powers in law. And I think it is in that context that he referred the matter to the relevant minister to take it up with the head of the NPA, who is the National Director of Public Prosecutions, Advocate Shamina Batoi. Now, if, for instance, Advocate Batoi had investigated and found probably gross misconduct on the part of Mr. Downer, and depending on the level of Mr. Downer in the NPA, because there are prosecutors in the NPA, including the national director, who are appointed by the president, and the president would probably have a duty to do something one way or the other, either to remove him or to take whatever action that he deems fit.
So if you had the ability to try and understand what was in the mind of former President Jacob Zuma in terms of what sort of action he believed current President Cyril Ramaphosa could take in that space, what would it be? I mean, one understands that former President Zuma was a president too, so he would have some sort of understanding of what sort of powers and the jurisdiction in which he can act. What do you think the former president understood President Cyril Ramaphosa to be able to do in that context?
Well, look, I'm baffled. I'm still, you know, trying, and I've tried hard to think about why a former president who has even, you know, remember, some of the decisions of Mr. Zuma to appoint prosecutors have even been challenged successfully in court. So he's very familiar with what a president can and cannot do. But I must also accept that we must accept that Mr. Zuma has got his own way of understanding what he wants to understand. Not necessarily that it's logical, but he's got his own way of, and just, you know, a practical example is, he stands on a public platform and says, well, I want my day in court. And of course, the day that he then wants in court is to challenge every step of his criminal trial. Whether he succeeds, he doesn't succeed, he will continue fighting. So I'm just a bit baffled, Aubrey, on what exactly former President Zuma had in mind. Because when you look at the bulk of what he does, it doesn't reflect on a person who's been a former president. For instance, he continues to be called president. I mean, he's not a president. We only have one president. Well, naturally, I would have expected him to say to whoever speaks for him to say, listen, don't call me president, call me former president, so that I respect the Constitution. It's got nothing to do with his successor. It's got to do with the commitment that he made at the time that he was president, which continues until he leaves this world, you know.
Yeah.
So, to a very great extent, I mean, it's difficult to even understand the thinking behind what Mr. Zuma has in mind.
Well, one could argue that Mr. Zuma is a politician and is therefore, you know, playing the political game. But I am interested perhaps in asking the questions around his legal team. If, for example, the accessing of court documents is part of the normal run of the mill of behavior in the legal space, and that once a document is understood to be a court document, it therefore becomes a public document and can be accessed by any South African if the right applications are done. I want to move a little bit away from President Jacob Zuma, former President Jacob Zuma, and talk of his legal team. Wouldn't somebody have said, listen, no, Papa, these things are available to anybody in the Republic of South Africa once it's a court document? Or is the argument that it was not yet a court document, and that's why I'm going after Billy Downer?
Yes, look, if Mr. Zuma's team associated themselves with a view that the document was not yet public document, when it was made public, they would probably have a basis to say, we then advise our client to assert his or her right. But how they would have arrived at that conclusion would be subject to the available information. Bear in mind, Aubrey, that we have not had the benefit of the trial and the evidence to understand what exactly is the basis. What we know is these two mutually destructive versions by Mr. Zuma and Mr. Downer on the other side. So we still don't know what was the basis of the formulation of the advice around taking this matter to court. But I must also indicate that quite often the situation is that the lawyer says to the client, look, these are your opportunities, these are your risks, and the client says, well, I'm taking the worst risk. You continue, and I've hired you to do this, do as much as you can. And so it's not often or always the fault of the lawyer. It might as well that you have got a client who says, well, even with the risk that you show me, I want to proceed. So I don't know. I cannot make a judgment call on whether these lawyers themselves acted improperly or not. But in the circumstances, I would have assumed that if I didn't believe that there was a basis for this, I wouldn't have said to my client, go to court. If the client insists, I would have said, please find Aubrey Masango to represent.
And that would be a disaster.
Then just deepen the crisis.
It would deepen the crisis in immeasurable ways, Mr. Manya. Give us a call as we try to understand these things with Mr. Modidi Mamanya, legal expert, trying to really break it down for us in terms that even Aubrey Masango can understand. Let me now move on to the issue of President Cyril Ramaphosa and former President Jacob Zuma. One may surmise, Mr. Manya, and again I'm moving into the political space here, that these are comrades, these are people that worked together as political operatives of the African National Congress at the highest levels of the state. They probably had a particular relationship. And on that basis, former President Jacob Zuma feels that Cyril Ramaphosa, the current president of the Republic of South Africa, can use his presidential privileges within the ambit of that relationship to assist him in his fight for justice in this particular case against Mr. Billy Downer and Ms. Karen Moore. Is that something worth mentioning or thinking about in this context?
Well, yes. I mean, you can stretch it to that level, Aubrey, but I think the expectation all of us must have on the head of state is to ensure that whenever he becomes aware of any irregularity, particularly that implicates human rights, he or she must stand up and act. However, he or she will have to act within the framework of the law. So even if the president sees that the minister probably is abusing me, the president will still have to follow the procedure of the law to bring that minister to book. It doesn't necessarily mean you will just say that. But, you know, in politics, it's complicated because you'll recall that the current president of Zimbabwe once ran away from his country and came here from his own comrades. The former president of Botswana, Yenkama Seretse-Khama, is here. His former deputy is now the man in charge there. He's ran away to South Africa. I mean, you know that the High Court in Botswana has dismissed an application for his warrant, to set aside his warrant of arrest. So I think in politics, it can take any dimension at any given stage.
Right. But as far as you're concerned, procedurally, President Cyril Ramaphosa acted within the ambit of the law in this particular case to refer the matter to the minister under which issues of justice, courts are, I suppose, his domain?
Yes, remember the Constitution, whilst it gives him the supreme authority over the Republic, it actually goes further to say he exercises those powers with other members of the executive. And that is the control that the founders of our nation put in place. You can imagine if I was a good friend of the president, and he would say, okay, don't arrest this man. But if he were to take such a decision, the Minister of Police must countersign that. And now the Minister of Police would say, no, Mr. President, I know you are the boss, but hang on, you are acting unlawfully. Those are the type of controls that we have in our constitutional framework.
So the president, President Cyril Ramaphosa, goes a particular route. He goes right to the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs and asks him to go through a process to try and give some relief to former President Jacob Zuma's complaints. And how is that an accessory to an injustice after the fact? Explain that to me, Mr. Manye.
Well, what I can explain is that is one of the questions the full bench asked, to say, let's assume there's incompetence on the part of the president. When does that incompetence become an offense? Let's assume that the president sort of failed to perform his statutory duties. Remember, we have not even come to the stage of asking the question whether the president actually had any duty. And I don't even think the president had a duty. Remember, the complaint was made to Advocate Downer's boss, the national director. He investigated the matter and found that there's no basis, and went further to decline to prosecute. Now, at the time that Mr. Zuma would have written to President Ramaphosa, he would have been aware that, you know, there's been that elaborate process. In fact, even when the president wrote to the minister, and the minister would have approached the national director, I'm sure the national director would have said, but I've already investigated this matter, here's my report. So at the end of the day, you know, I can't see, even with some wildest imagination, how the president could be guilty of any offense, whether it's an accessory or anything else. Because in all fairness, there's no allegation that he participated himself in the disclosure of the documents or covered up the disclosure of the documents. I don't think that is the case against him. That is the least that would go towards making him an accessory.
Yeah. So what about... because what I'm trying to do here, Mr. Manya, is to try and perhaps give former President Jacob Zuma the benefit of the doubt and try to see things his way. He accuses Cyril Ramaphosa, the President of the Republic now, of being an accessory to an injustice after the fact because he didn't do what?
Well, firstly, let me say that sometimes if you want to give Mr. Zuma the benefit of doubt, you will not benefit from that yourself. Because I think, as I said, my view is that his interpretation of things, it's obviously often very contrived and convenient. The issue is the president, has he... one way or the other, assisted Mr. Downer to disclose this information to Karen Mon. If not, has in any way participated after becoming aware of the disclosure. And now the question of would the president ordinarily be aware of it, that Advocate Downer has had interactions with Karen Mon, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the evidence which must come to court to justify a link between the offense allegedly committed by Mr. Downer and the president. And as I say, that's where the difficulty lies. And I think because we have not even had the benefit of the trial and to hear, because for instance, I'm curious to hear in the first instance, who is going to be the first witness to explain what transpired? Because between Karen Mon and Advocate Downer, they don't have to give evidence for the state.
And now the issue of the nolle prosequi certificate. We understand that one was issued in favor of Mr. Downer and later for Karen Mon, right? Was there ever a nolle prosequi certificate issued for the president? I say this because at some point, the National Prosecuting Authority comes out in the whole debacle to say, no, a nolle prosequi certificate is only valid if it names a particular person in relation to the case that is being argued. And then said that President Cyril Ramaphosa does not appear in the nolle prosequi in relation to Billy Downer and later Karen Mon. Take us through the process that must be followed in order for President Cyril Ramaphosa to also be part of this regime, this nolle prosequi certificate.
All right, Aubrey, this is should happen, is that somebody would lay criminal charges against Aubrey, okay? And the police would investigate in the ordinary course, prepare a docket, send it to the prosecutors. And the prosecutors look at the docket and say, well, yes, we're charging this one with theft. Or they say, no, man, look, there's no basis here. The evidence here would not suffice to sustain a charge of theft. So we cannot prosecute. And it is at that point that they then tell you that, no, we're not prosecuting Aubrey for the alleged theft. Then it is at that stage that you say, okay, I'm dissatisfied with your decision. Now you've got two options. One of them is that you could go to the National Director of Prosecution, Public Prosecution, and say, look, I'm not happy with the decision of your prosecutors. Can you review it? And he or she reviews it and says, well, I support their decision. There's no basis to prosecute. Then you ask for a document that is called, that is the record of the decision not to prosecute. The nolle prosequi is the record of the decision. So they will then say, fine, here is our confirmation that we are not prosecuting Aubrey Masango. You can then take that document and say, I'm now initiating my private prosecution. So that is...
But then there's something very important there, Mr. Manya. This certificate is a certificate that says we are not prosecuting this person. It does not say you must prosecute this person privately.
No.
Oh?
It just confirms that they are not prosecuting. You then decide to exercise the exception that the law provides, that you can initiate a prosecution yourself, the private prosecution.
Oh, so this certificate isn't a permission, it isn't an active permission by the National Prosecuting Authority to say you may now launch a private prosecution. It simply is a washing of the hands by the National Prosecution Authority to say that we are not going to prosecute Aubrey Masango. What you then do with that afterwards then becomes your prerogative. It is not a a document to say this person is to be prosecuted privately.
No.
Oh.
They are saying we don't think there's a basis to prosecute.
Oh.
You then say, okay, if you think there's no basis to prosecute, I think there's a basis. I want to prosecute. Now, you then produce, amongst others, that document and say, you see, they said they are not going to prosecute. So I want to exercise my right in law, which is to institute a private prosecution. So you must draft the charge sheet, you must issue the summons, you must run the process of prosecuting a person.
I see. I suppose maybe that was just me and my lack of understanding of the law to understand. And I think that many of us out there might be thinking the same way, that this not a prosecutor certificate was an active permission for private prosecution by the NPA. I think that message might have been put out there inadvertently by not understanding these processes. All right. I want to take two calls, maybe three, that'll help us get to the point where we got this setting aside, but granting of the interdict for President Cyril Ramaphosa. Touch is in Johannesburg. Good evening to you, Touch.
Good evening, Aubrey, and your guest. Two quick words, Aubrey.
Yeah.
Now, the nolle prosequi certificate that your guest is talking about, now, the NPA has already disowned it. And then, no. This is not what it means. It means the following. In other words, they're on the side of the current president. Now, I'm trying to understand the basis. How is possible is it that, no, then you're going to have the former president, depending on the same document, that the author is saying, no, that it doesn't mean this. It means something different. So I'm trying to understand there that can you depend on such a document when the author is saying, no, but this is not A, this is B.
Yeah.
And when are you claiming to be B? Now, the second question, a quick one, when your guest was making an example, you were telling about the police investigating and then the prosecutor and then making maybe approaching the NDPP to make a review. Now, here's my question. Is it possible for me after the investigation and everything else, after the NDPP refused to review the prosecutor and say, no, I'm going to prosecute him? Oh, I want a certificate which will say, I'm going to prosecute everyone who's associated with this matter.
Yes.
I just have to choose.
No, understood, Touch. Thanks very much. Mr. Manya? Hello, Mr. Manya?
Yes, I can hear you, Aubrey.
How do you respond to Touch's question?
Well, on the second question, I think that is really the crux of the matter, to say, the certificate must mention the person in respect of whom a decision has been taken not to prosecute. And that person would be a person in respect of whom a criminal complaint has been made. Now, you can't say because my name features somewhere, then I'm part of that. There must have been a particular complaint against me. You see, for instance, one of the things that will probably feature prominently in the review, that is part B, is exactly what is it that the certificate means. It's not the interpretation doesn't lie with the author. The interpretation will lie with the court, because it is the court which will interpret. What the NPA will do will explain how this document that is relied upon came about. Then the court will then look at the document and say, where does it mention a criminal charge against the president? But we must also bear in mind, obviously, that there's another disturbing aspect to this, is that the case seems to be against Mr. Cyril Matamela Ramaphosa in his personal capacity,
yes.
Not Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of the republic. Now, this whole saga revolves around the exercise of presidential powers or an expectation of the exercise of presidential power. So there's just quite a number of things that don't add up with regard to this. Now, but let me explain this thing that has featured prominently in our law. It's what we call the common purpose principle, where you had 10 people involved in the commission of a crime, but maybe one being the perpetrator of the crime. And
yes,
the courts have convicted people on the basis that you associate yourself with it. But even in that case, even if it's a group of people, each one of them is identified. Each one of them is charged. So you can't just say in this community, because they say the community was involved, I want to pick up Mania here because I think he was there. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it can be quite dangerous, I think. Let's take a call from Moshere in Pretoria West. Hi, Moshere.
Yes, Aubrey, I was under the impression that once you ask the lawyer to represent you, after the briefing, the lawyer can't refuse to represent you based on what you have told him, and the lawyer realizes that, no, there is no case, a winnable case here. I'm saying this because of the representation of Zuma. Normally, we will see one lawyer basically representing Zuma, and most of the lawyers now, and also with your guest, explaining that the lawyer can refuse to represent based on the briefing. What could be the motivation for the lawyer, knowing very well that the case is not winnable, continue to represent you?
Mr. Manya?
Yes, look, as a lawyer, I never represent anybody on the basis that I'll win a case. I represent people on the basis that I'll go and argue a case. And where I think there's a contradiction is where you feel that the advice you give and the instructions of the client cannot bring about the convergence of mind. Now, we also have an ethical duty. Remember, to be admitted to be a legal practitioner, you take an oath to uphold the law. You have a duty not to hide information from the court. So in many instances, there would probably be a sort of a conflict between what the ethical responsibilities of the lawyer are and the demands of the client. But as I say, if a client were to not take my advice, then the client is as good as the lawyer, and the client can go and do it himself or herself. I mean, I'm not going to go and do something that I don't even believe in. I mean, something that is slow. Remember, lawyers also are business people, there are reputational issues. I mean, I'm not going to go to court and share and say things that I do not think make sense. I mean, who else is going to come and brief me? I will just be running myself out of business.
Mr. Manya, finally, the interdict has been granted, but pending certain issues. We've heard from the full bench that there's a part B to all of this. Talk to us about that. What does all of that mean?
All right. This is what happens, Aubrey. When you have what you view as an immediate threat to your eye, you have an opportunity in law to approach the court on an urgent basis to give you interim relief. It's interim. It's in the meantime.
Mm.
Protect me whilst we are dealing with the substance of the issue. And this is how the Part A and the Part B comes about. The Part A was, please protect me in the meantime. We still have to debate the merits of this matter in an orderly court. So the, as you can see, the urgent part has been the Part A. The orderly part is the Part B. So what will then happen is that the court says, okay, in the meantime, this man should not be violated. We believe that at face value, he's facing a violation of his rights. So we stop in that. Let the matter go to the orderly court where every issue can be ventilated. If that court were to find that there's no violation, then the whole thing will continue as normal. If it finds that there is a violation, it will then stop the whole thing permanently. So it's not like the president is off the hook. It's simply that in the meantime, and pending the determination of, for instance, whether there's actually a certificate non a prosecution, whether there is actually an offense that has been committed, he cannot be brought before a criminal court.
So this means that on the 19th, which would have been the date that President Cyril Ramaphosa would have had to appear in terms of the private prosecution by former President Jacob Zuma, President Cyril Ramaphosa does not have to appear.
No, he must now go and attend to state matters.
And how will the issue of Part B be resolved? Who then initiates that particular court? How is Part B going to be resolved? And how quickly can this happen? In other words, how urgent is that?
I think, interestingly, the judgment and the order specifically directed the parties to approach the deputy judge president to put in place the logistics for the matter to be heard. It's called case management, which means that the parties will appear before the deputy judge president. They will make arrangements to ensure that the matter is ready and agree on a date on which the matter is to be heard.
I'm going to make a political statement, and as we close, I'd like your thoughts. I suppose what would have been a desire at some level for some people is that the president be charged criminally. And that would feed into the ANC's step-aside rule, where President Cyril Ramaphosa, in terms of the ANC's constitution, would have to step aside. Has President Cyril Ramaphosa dodged that bullet in this case?
Yes. I would say, you know, in that context, he has. But, you know, for me, I think the other political statement is whether there isn't a project to try and destabilize the country. I often think this has got nothing to do with President Ramaphosa. Obviously, he's a player. He's a key player as head of state. But I'm not sure whether this is not about all of us as the Republic. I mean, we're going through a very difficult time.
Yeah.
And for me, it gets worse when a former head of state who is facing corruption charges, and we have seen Lula da Silva in Brazil has even been to jail. You know, he followed the legal process and got out of it. Whether we are not having the country being destabilized deliberately, because some of these things don't make sense at all. Yes, it might be just cheap political games. If it's political games, it's low-life political games. It's putting the entire nation at risk.
Mr. Modiri Mamanya, thank you so much for joining us. Much appreciated. We appreciate your time.